What's up, everybody? Welcome to the special edition of Straight Shooter, coming at you as I love to do at least a couple of times a week over the digital airwaves of YouTube. Of course, you know, I have my show on POTUS Radio, channel 124 on Sirius XM every Wednesday night from 6 to 8 p.m. This falls in line with that kind of content because it's an interesting interview I have coming your way with the one and only Riley Gaines. If you remember, she's a former NCAA, 12-time NCAA All-American swimmer at the University of Kentucky, who's now become a conservative radio host and is very, very popular for focusing on anti-trans activism in light of the battles and the challenges that she faced while being a swimmer at Kentucky and competing in the NCAA. So we'll get into all of that with her in just a little bit, in light of the Supreme Court's ruling just a couple of days ago, where they basically did, actually upheld laws in both Idaho and West Virginia about transgenders not being able to compete in women's sports. But before I do any of that, let me remind you to be sure to subscribe, to hit the subscribe button, and you'll be notified for all of our newest content coming your way as a newest member of Straight Shooter with yours truly. Just hit that subscribe button and make sure you subscribe. Also, subscribe to the sports show, the Stephen A. Smith Show. We appreciate the love coming that way as well. Getting back to Riley Gaines, like I said, I've interviewed this young lady before. She's a very, very impressive young lady, very bright young lady, very passionate young lady with the credentials to speak on this issue in regards to the Supreme Court and its latest ruling. Very few people on the planet actually are more qualified to speak on this issue than her. Again, she's a 12-time NCAA All-American. She competed for the Kentucky Wildcats swim team in the Southeastern Conference before graduating and focusing on anti-trans activism. She's a conservative political activist. She's done a lot of great things in regards to this issue on behalf of not just herself, but young women everywhere, because she believes that having to compete against somebody transitioning from a man to a woman is not fair to an abundance of young ladies. I believe it's an argument that's hard to dispute. It's hard to argue. Nevertheless, there are many who have tried, and she has fought time and time and time again throughout the years. And just recently, with the Supreme Court's latest ruling, it supported her position. So that's what it's all about right here. We're about being fair-minded. We're about understanding the facts and making sure, in light of those facts that come to fruition, that we're willing to allow that to dictate where we stand, as opposed to our preferential point of view, for lack of better words. That's how I view it. So I'm looking forward to talking to Riley Gaines, and I hope you all enjoy this conversation as well. Take a listen. My next guest is a former NCAA All-American swimmer turned women's rights activist and conservative cultural and political pundit, now hosting the Riley Gaines Show. Please welcome back to Straight Shooter with yours truly, the one and only Riley Gaines. How are you, Riley? How's everything going?
Man, I am really, really good. Excited to be on with you, of course, coming off the news of yesterday. So there's a lot to be excited about. There's a lot to celebrate, but there's a lot still left to do.
I get you. I got you. Let me remind the audience why you are here, because the Supreme Court upholds a ban on transgender athletes competing in girls and women's sports. Obviously, you were at the forefront of that. How did you feel? How good was yesterday's ruling for you personally?
Yeah, you know what? Of course, it was long awaited, long overdue. I was at the Supreme Court back in January, listening to the oral arguments that was being heard inside of the court. And so this is something that the public has known about for several months, something that I had anticipated for many years now. So excited, of course, vindicated. I think vindicated is a good word, because over the past few years, of course, it's negative headlines and criticism, false headlines, quite frankly, and pressure and negative comments. But when you have a ruling like we did yesterday, it makes all of that worth it. But I will say, Stephen, I feel slightly exhausted, if being totally transparent, that we're still having this conversation, that something like this has to be legislated on or ruled on by the highest court. You know, when you have this conversation, even what I have found with like young kids, if you're trying to explain it to them in like a kid-friendly manner, they're like, yeah, well, duh. Duh, boys shouldn't be in girls' sports. So there's a level of exhaustion, but nonetheless, again, we're celebrating.
I want to provide, you know, my viewers with some context here. I want to give my viewers some context in terms of, you know, how you became a prominent activist opposing transgender women's inclusion in female sports, okay? At the 2022 NCAA Women's Swimming Championships, you tied for fifth place in the 200-yard freestyle final with transgender swimmer Leah Thomas. You were beaten by the top four swimmers but objected to the tie for fifth with Thomas, and that's really how all of this took place. Go back to that moment in time when you opposed Thomas and the kind of resistance you were facing at that particular moment in time. Just like you said, you can't believe it now. As exhausted as you are saying that you feel now, I can't imagine how exhausted you must have felt in 2022 because this argument seemed to be very simplistic, let alone there was so much resistance.
Yeah, just to provide some context, we're competing at the national championship, which is the pinnacle of our sport. It's the fastest meet in the world. Even comparatively, the NCAA championships for Division I swimming is faster than the Olympics because of how much depth the U.S. has, how people from all across the world come to the U.S. to participate in NCAA athletics. So the pinnacle of our sport, you're in the championship final. So you've got the top eight women in the entire country, and you look over a few lanes down from you, and you see what is very obviously a man, to put it pretty frank. This is a man who's 6'4". Who's got like size 15 feet, taking up the entire diving block. Not to be explicit, but just in describing exactly what we saw, visible right. from his profiles, like not only his Adam's apple, but like a bulge in his women's swimsuit. Again, it's like, it feels very much like a South Park episode that had then, I guess, become the blueprint for what we were experiencing as female athletes. And so thinking of my feelings then, it's hard to describe. There was a part of me that you almost want to laugh because, again, it feels satirical. You feel like someone's going to jump out with a camera and be like, you're on an episode of Pranked. Right. But really, I felt betrayed. I felt betrayed by an institution that I loved, that I trusted, that I dedicated my life to, an institution that I believed had my best interests at heart. And they threw our rights to equal opportunity, our rights to privacy entirely out of the window. And I think when you really chew on it and why they did those things to, I guess, guard a man's feelings as opposed to us and to our opportunities, that man's feelings mattered more. That's how I felt in the moment. I felt betrayed. I felt humiliated. I felt angry. But again, that's why I use the word vindicated to describe how I feel now.
Be specific about where you felt the betrayal was coming from. Was it the swimming association? Was it the NCAA? Who did you feel betrayed you, the ladies, et cetera?
Well, I think there's a lot of fingers that you could point, but the feeling of betrayal really came at that time, as I understood it, from the NCAA. This was actually the 50th year of Title IX, and I will never forget the NCAA. You know, you get there and you're on the pool deck and they're handing out these Nike t-shirts that say 50 years of Title IX creating opportunities for women. But then at that same meet, they've got us competing against a man who couldn't hack it in the men's category. And I just remember like thinking to myself, how in the world can you sit here and say that you're, you know, creating opportunities for women when you're actively taking them away? You know, by him being there, despite the fact that he finished fifth in that race, he won a national championship the day before, despite the fact that he finished eighth in the country, nonetheless, still a huge achievement, and the 100 freestyle, his allowance to be there meant someone else didn't get to come, a deserving woman. And so you're sitting here saying you're creating opportunities, but you're taking them away from women. And so I felt betrayed by the NCAA, but now I'm understanding really just how institutionalized this issue has become and how there's fingers to be pointed, I guess, in many different areas and directions.
I don't know if anybody has ever asked you this, but I'm going to, because I'm the youngest of six and I have four older sisters. Now, according to how I grew up, I've never encountered a situation where my sisters disagreed with something and I didn't hear from them directly. So I often wondered when the world heard about this going on, did any of you ladies confront Leah Thomas? Did you confront him directly and ask him, what are you doing here? What are you thinking of? Why would you do this?
You know, honestly, to go back to that time, again, 2022, it was a pretty different political, social, cultural moment that we were living in, even speaking personally. Like, I was very fearful. I was very fearful of the potential consequences, the things that they told us were going to happen if we spoke about this. And I didn't really have a problem with him specifically, and even still, quite frankly, I recognized that he was following the rules. He really was, whether I liked the rules or not, he was following the rules. I recognized the entire time it was the rules that I had a problem with, not necessarily him. And that's something that is oftentimes misconstrued in the headlines about me. I'm labeled as this, like, you know, anti-trans, homophobic, racist, bigot, whatever, you know, the words that they use, when in reality, look, I mean, he's a consenting adult. If he wants to go through those changes and it doesn't cost me my taxpayer dollars, I really don't care, quite frankly, because I really do believe in limited government. I think that's what makes America so great. That's the beautiful thing about America, is if you want to do those things, I don't have to support it. I don't have to agree with it or celebrate it necessarily, but you get to do those things. So I never really had a problem with him. That being said, I'm not going to call him a woman, because that would be lying. I would be lying to myself and to anyone who's listening to me by even using preferred pronouns, right? By referring to him as her, the phrase of her penis, I saw her penis in the locker room. That's an absurd thing to say. And that's a lie. And so I'm not going to concede there, but I don't necessarily have a problem with Thomas. He was just following the rules. And that's how the majority of us on that pool deck felt.
The top ladies, the top four ladies that won that swimming tournament is Taylor Ruck, Isabel Ivey, Brooke Forde, I hope I pronounced the name correctly, Forde, and Emma Wyant. They did not join your lawsuit against the NCAA. Why do you think that was?
You know, all of those women that you just mentioned are Olympians. So look, they're the best of the best, incredibly talented, like some of the fastest women in the entire world in history of ever. Okay. They went on to continue their swimming career. I knew I was done. Actually, I was in dental school following my time in undergrad. And so I think there was a part of me that recognized my swimming career was behind me. I felt like I could engage in this. And truthfully, I'm kind of ashamed to admit this, but I'm a very self-aware person. I think if I had another year of competing, let's say I was a junior when this happened, honestly, I don't think I would have taken that initial leap of faith, because my swimming career, I really believed truthfully, and I will say my, you know, outlook on this has changed now. But I think at the time I would have thought my swimming career is more important. It wasn't worth risking necessarily. Now compare that to how I feel now. And I recognize this fight as necessary and certainly urgent. And I say that as someone who has a younger sister who is 17. She's an elite level gymnast. She will go on to do incredible things. But also now I have a daughter. At the time when I was competing, you know, the thought of having a daughter was like a hypothetical. Right. I could, you know, only have hoped to have one day, but now she's here. And I think about her and I recognize what a grave injustice and disservice I would be doing if I didn't use my voice and experience to make a better future for her. Nothing is more important than that. No swimming career, no trophy, no opportunity, nothing. So my perspective has certainly shifted. But I think that's a large part of why these women haven't been involved in the same way, because I can tell you from personal and private conversations, again, 95% of women, I would imagine, on that pool deck agreed that it was wrong that he was able to compete with us.
Well, the thing that's always been shocking to me is that obviously we live in an age where, you know, awareness to the plight of women in this country have come to the forefront on a bevy of issues, as well they should. We all know this. So I'm shocked that seeing something so flagrantly unfair to young ladies out there is something women universally haven't stood up and opposed, regardless of what your political affiliation may be attached to. That's what I don't get. Have you found any kind of reasonable explanation in your mind since 2022 as to why any woman would be for this kind of thing happening to begin with?
You know, I think as women, on average, we tend to be more apologetic and emotionally driven and empathetic. And I will say these are wonderful things. They really are. Especially as women, it's what makes us such great wives and friends and sisters and moms. Okay. It's what makes us those nurturers. These are good things, but I really do believe that inherent desire to be compassionate and empathetic, I believe that's been weaponized against us. Even look at the Supreme Court ruling that we saw yesterday, where on the equal protection clause side of things, as it pertains to the 14th Amendment, we had three Democrat appointed liberal women, liberal justices who voted in opposition of our rights as women. So it almost as if it continues to prove that, and I don't say this lightly, again, I could give you example after example, whether it's the violence against women by illegal alien. I mean, there's 100 examples of how women, liberal women specifically, and I hate to make it partisan, again, I'm just speaking pretty objectively, liberal women seem to be the biggest hurdle, the biggest obstacle that women face in the fight for equality. And yesterday's Supreme Court ruling was further evidence of that.
Why do you think that is? Why do you think that is? We're talking about liberal women. I get it. I remember when, you know, listen, the Supreme Court, and they asked Ketanji Brown Jackson about being a woman, and she would not confirm that. You know, she wouldn't confirm that at that particular moment. I remember that. I remember you bringing that up as well, and you were accurate about that. I mean, how does that happen? You call yourself a liberal, a progressive, yet this is something that you oppose. How have you, what argument have you heard from the other side of the aisle to justify that position when it comes in support of supporting transgender athletes competing against women, naturally born women.
I think they've just been lied to on what it actually means to be progressive. Of course, progressive indicates progress, indicates moving in the positive forward direction. But what we're seeing, it's not progress. Actually, it's really regressive, deeply regressive. It's utterly misogynistic. It's taking us back in time at least 54 years before Title IX was enacted. And same thing with compassion. It's really not compassionate to lie and to affirm someone's wrongful delusion. Again, I'm not trying to be disrespectful or mean or rude. Like I'm speaking pretty honestly here. It's not empathetic to ask your daughter to undress in front of grown men who are simultaneously exposing themselves. Like, that's not what empathy is. I think the most compassionate, the most loving, the kindest thing that you can do is to speak the truth. That's what kindness is, at least even speaking from a biblical perspective, which, again, not to go there. But I just think we have a totally misconstrued, false conception of what these words, even the word inclusion, has been totally hijacked. They say what happened to me and my teammates was inclusive. Inclusion inherently is a good thing. But in this regard, what me and my teammates went through, it wasn't inclusive. It was exclusive because women were excluded from the category that was created to celebrate and honor and protect us as women. So I think we just have a totally backwards idea of what some of these words really mean in their true connotation that oftentimes leads for women to fall victim.
Maybe not in your case, because you were actually competing against a transgender athlete. And as a result, you know, it was in stark opposition to what you believe, as you just articulated so eloquently. But what about the argument that trans people make up less than 0.002%, like 10 out of every 500,000 U.S. collegiate athlete, and even fewer of recent Olympians? I think it's at 0.001%. What about the argument that, why are folks picking on them? Why don't you leave them alone? There's such a small group of people, you know, it's, they've already been marginalized. Why bother them? How does Riley Gaines respond to somebody that would throw that particular question in her face?
Well, I think the first thing I would say is, okay, cool. Then why do we have to change all of our rules to accommodate for such a small percentage, right? Like, that feels like the pretty obvious, natural thing to come to my mind, at least. But I think secondly there, in responding to, you know, it's such a small percentage. This is oftentimes how we see things like this really grow into larger percentages. By the way, it starts off, well, okay, it's not really happening, but then that transcends into, okay, it's happening, but it's such a small percentage, you're not going to be affected by it. Well, then that changes to, okay, it's happening, but here's why it's actually a good thing. And then that changes to, it's happening, it's a good thing, and if you don't celebrate it, you're the one who's going to be reprimanded. So it's a slippery slope. And that's again, speaking from history, what history tells us happens when that's the argument. I really do believe, especially when talking about elected representation, we have seen so much deflection. We have seen so much of, it's not really happening, just as you described. I believe every single elected official should be forced to answer the question of, or should at least be asked the question, should boys compete in girls' sports? Because I think it's a really, really good litmus test. And if you see refusal to answer, or you know, someone who says yes, quite frankly, or, you know, try to change lanes, I think that should be a disqualifying factor for any common sense American, because if you can't emphatically say that boys and girls are physically different, if you can't emphatically say that no, men cannot become pregnant, if you can't say that no, women don't need prostate exams or that tampons don't belong in boys' bathrooms, if you can't say those things, then why should I believe a single word that comes out of your mouth on any topic? Because you've already proven yourself to be a liar and totally detached from reality. So I think the question, should boys play in girls' sports, is a really good litmus test, especially for public officials.
I completely agree with you. I've stated for the record, I completely agree with this decision. I got no problems with it. I ride with you on this one. You're absolutely right. We're talking to Raleigh Gaines right here with Straight Shooter with yours truly. Before I let you go, you talked about how there's more work to be done, considering the fact that the Supreme Court came down with this ruling. It's now a federal ban. What is the work that, what is the additional work you believe there is to be done?
So basically this ruling, it means that it's not illegal for women to have sports exclusive to just women. It's not that, you know, states must have women's only sports. It's that they can. And so 27 states have passed some sort of fairness in women's sports law. My home state of Tennessee has, you know, the ones, right?
Yes.
Texas, Florida, the usual actors in this situation. That means 23 states have not passed some sort of law. California, Washington, Oregon, Michigan, Maine, Minnesota, yada, yada, yada. You get it. We have no reason to believe that they will now follow federal law, that federal law being Title IX. We have no reason to believe that they will follow President Trump's executive orders, because up until this point, they think they're giving a middle finger to President Trump. That's really not what they're doing at all. They're giving a middle finger to the little girls in their state who want to compete fairly. So as it stands now, based on this ruling, fairness and safety in women's sports is dependent on your zip code and your geography and where you live. I don't think it should be that way. I think every girl is entitled to equal opportunity, to privacy, and to safety. So still work to be done in those 23 states that have not yet passed state law. So I hope we see real enforcement mechanisms from the Department of Justice, from the Department of Education. I hope we see individual lawsuits and litigation. I hope we see ballot measures. There's a lot of work to do to again, ensure that every girl, regardless of where you live, is protected.
If I thought you were wrong, I would argue with you. I don't happen to believe you're wrong about a single word you've uttered. Raleigh Gaines, I really appreciate your time showing up on the show today. Thank you so much. All the best to you and congratulations. We'll talk soon.
And you. Thank you.
All right. She's right. She's right. Listen, you can talk about popular being unpopular. Listen, let me be very, very clear. Boys should not be competing in women's sports. It's a disservice to the young ladies out there. Young ladies, born female. It's a disservice to them. You're at a distinct advantage if you are a man competing in a woman's sport. Plain and simple. Okay? We don't even have to get to the other parts about men and women's bathrooms and all this stuff. I don't agree with that either. I got two daughters. Hell no. Hell no. Okay? Let me be clear. But this is strictly about transgenders competing in women's sports. No. It was never right. It was always wrong. And that's not speaking against those who are transgender. That's not infringing upon their rights, you know, to transition from one gender to another. It doesn't mean that their civil rights, civil liberties, or anything else should be violated. It means that those who are born ladies, girls in this world biologically, need to be considered and protected too. Raleigh Gaines is right. Period. She's right. That's it for this special edition, Straight Shooter with yours truly. You heard what I had to say about it. I'm not backing up. She's certainly not backing up, nor should she. Common sense rules the day, ladies and gentlemen. Eventually and inevitably, whether we like it or not. Peace and love, y'all. Till next time.